This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
The go-to lunchbox items for many parents, bologna and Vienna sausages, have been recalled in South Africa. The country's health department is advising people to avoid all processed meat products until further notice.
That's reporter Nadia Same in Johannesburg. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga met today in an apparent effort to settle months of violent post-election tension. And according to observers, none of the presidential candidates in Sierra Leone will have enough votes to reach the 55% threshold required to be declared a winner.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga met today in an apparent effort to settle months of violent post-election tensions. The meeting came just hours before a visit by U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. VOA's Daniel Scherf reports from Nairobi.
In a surprise meeting Friday, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga agreed to work toward unifying the country after last year's divisive presidential election. The two Kenyan leaders, who spoke separately after the talks and did not take questions, acknowledged the country was heading in the wrong direction. Odinga, who has refused to recognize Kenyatta as president, paraphrased U.S. President Abraham Lincoln. He said Kenya needed to know where they are and where they want to go before they can better judge what to do and how to do it.
54 years into independence, we are challenged to audit our progress towards the ideals for which our fathers fought to establish a free and independent country, and for which many of our compatriots died.
As leaders, said Odinga, they had a duty to reflect on their performance in reaching Kenya's goals since independence: justice, unity, peace, liberty, and prosperity for all. President Uhuru Kenyatta said the two men came to a common understanding that for Kenya to come together, its leaders must come together.
And this is what me and my brother have agreed, that starting today, we will begin a process of bringing our people together, that we will begin a process of discussing what ails us and what creates division amongst us.
On the streets of Nairobi, Kenyans also welcomed the leaders agreeing to work together.
It's a really good step towards harmonizing the country because the electioneering period has left us divided across the divide, supporters of both sides. So I think it's a really good idea that they've met, and hopefully you can progress from this.
If they resolve their issues, well, that is a good thing, because we need to move forward. And as a country, well, you know, the economy has been down. So if they resolve their issues, well, at least it will show that we are moving forward, and the issue to do with the election, it is behind us.
Kenya was plunged into political crisis after the Supreme Court annulled the August election due to irregularities, and Odinga and his supporters boycotted a second round in October. Odinga refused to recognize Kenyatta's win, and in January held a rally where his supporters symbolically inaugurated the opposition leader as president. Observers feared further division would follow the provocative action and the government's crackdown on independent television and the opposition. Friday's breakthrough came just hours before U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is, for the first time, to visit Kenya. Not a coincidence, says independent political analyst Martin Andati.
The meeting must have been come out of pressure from the U.S. Secretary of State, who is expected here anytime. You know, the West has been very keen on trying to get Uhuru and Raila to meet. So it helps ease the political tensions, because the political tensions have been very high.
While Andati says the agreement on unification is significant for healing Kenyan politics, the devil will be in the details. We need to understand what exactly has been agreed upon, he said, noting the Kenyan leader's statements contained only generalities. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson starts a three-day visit to Kenya today, hours after the country's president and main opposition leader announced they will pursue reconciliation. The announcement raises hopes for easing Kenya's political tensions, which have been running high since last year's contentious presidential election. Despite the promising development, the global spotlight from Tillerson's five-nation African trip has shifted to news that President Donald Trump has agreed to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un before May. The surprise announcement comes after months of increasingly hostile rhetoric between the two leaders over North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile programs. That was the focus during a news conference Tillerson held before leaving Djibouti for Nairobi. Tillerson said yesterday that the conditions weren't right for negotiations with the North, although the administration was open to having talks at some point.
Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission today plans to release the results of the first 25% of votes counted from Wednesday's general election. The announcement came as local radio and television stations released unconfirmed results from polling stations across the country. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, which monitored the elections, is calling on the Electoral Commission to step up efforts to announce the results. At a news conference in the capital, Freetown, the ECOWAS monitors also congratulated Sierra Leoneans for voting peacefully. Marcella Samba-Sese, executive director of a prominent Sierra Leonean group of observers, National Elections Watch, says her organization's analysis shows there will likely be a presidential runoff. That's because, in her view, none of the presidential candidates will have enough votes to reach the 55% threshold required to be declared winner.
Listeria has killed 180 people in South Africa. The World Health Organization calls the outbreak the worst in global history. The National Health Department has identified the source as Poloni, a widely consumed ready-to-eat product made by meat giant Enterprise Foods. All of the company's processed products have been pulled from shelves in South Africa and several other countries. The outbreak has sparked panic among parents and schools, many of which serve Poloni and Vienna sausages to children as part of their lunch offerings. From Johannesburg, Nadia Same has the story.
The go-to lunchbox items for many parents, Poloni and Vienna sausages, have been recalled in South Africa. The country's health department is advising people to avoid all processed meat products until further notice. Listeria is a bacteria found in soil and can end up in vegetables and uncooked meat. It causes fevers, muscle aches, nausea, and sometimes a nervous system infection. Over 1,000 cases have been confirmed in the country, and the death toll stands at 180. Parents are scrambling to find alternatives. Sally Chait runs a nursery school in Johannesburg's northern suburbs that, like many other schools, served the popular meat products.
I must admit we were a bit shocked. We didn't realize that was where it was coming from. How did it happen? So our immediate reaction was, okay, at least it got to the source of where it is. And how are we going to deal with this? What are we going to do?
Chait immediately put the alert to parents, cautioning against putting the recalled products in snack boxes.
We see a tremendous amount of it, the little Vienna sausages and all that sort of thing that the parents seem to like to put into their Poloni sandwiches, literally chunks of Poloni that are put in certain children's lunch boxes. That was our concern, and that was immediate, where we needed to cut that.
Some parents are turning to cheese, jam, or peanut butter as replacements. Low-income earners are hardest hit. Portia Tupé is a domestic worker and mother of two. She's struggling to find a new sandwich filler.
I'm on budget, and when I buy things, I buy the basic, and I buy once. On Monday, I made a breakfast for my son and lunch. Then at school, he had a Poloni, then he couldn't finish it. They sent him to sick bay because he wasn't feeling okay. And I arrived here at work, my boss told me that Tekka Brands product is not well, then when I arrive home, I check that it's a Togo bread product, then I have to substitute the paloni with the jam and peanut butter to put on his sandwich, and he's not liking it.
Principal Chait has resolved to permanently exclude all processed meat products from her school's menu.
But I buy in bulk on a monthly basis from Macro, and I would choose something that was nice to go with the main ingredients, which is your vegetables, which was a potato salad and grated carrots and apple. So we would choose a protein to go with it. So we either decided on hard-boiled eggs, which is a lovely form of protein for them, or we move the winter menu in, which is a vegetable soup. We do a thick vegetable soup with brown bread.
The listeria outbreak also hurt small informal businesses that sell food on township streets. Their main ingredients are the now banned paloni and Vienna sausages. The traders say their customers are not fond of proposed vegetarian alternatives, meaning business is taking a dip. For VOA News, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
16 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. While often called the world's oldest profession, prostitution is found in every country in the world. However, most sex work, especially prostitution, is illegal or tightly controlled. Advocates for sex workers say that often leads to violence and other abuse, usually against women. Sex workers also usually are denied even the most basic labor protections. But now sex workers and their allies are organizing for change. As part of our International Women's Day coverage this week, VOA's Adam Phillips takes a look at the effort to protect sex workers.
The weather was cold last Sunday, but it was plenty steamy inside the Sex Workers Festival of Resistance at PS1, a branch annex of New York's Museum of Modern Art. That's where perhaps 400 sex workers, sex worker advocates, and supportive onlookers gathered to celebrate and organize.
Many people focus on the sex part of sex work rather than the work part of sex work.
RJ Thompson is a lawyer with the Sex Workers Project at the Urban Justice Center in Manhattan. Thompson also happens to be a gay sex escort and porn star, both for the fun of it and the extra cash. He says many people wrongly assume that sex workers are trafficking victims.
We oppose human trafficking, of course, as a gross violation of human rights in all cases, and we work with survivors of human trafficking all the time. But someone who engages in sex work by choice or circumstance, who has never experienced trafficking, has certain rights as a worker that should be protected. They have a right to be safe in their work environment, to set their own boundaries with clients, to be paid what they are entitled to be paid for their time and labor.
Although both men and women engage in sex work, prostitution has a female face, says Melissa Brudo, an attorney and human rights activist who co-directs the Sharmus Outlaw Rights and Advocacy Institute.
Because it's around sex and because it is often around female sexuality, it's completely devalued. Because women are devalued, and in American society, in a lot of societies, we are very confused about sex and sexuality and its place, and who should or shouldn't be having sex, and in what context, in what way. And so I think we are extremely preoccupied with regulating that and with regulating women's bodies.
Berklee College sociologist Heidi Hofinger, who studies sex work worldwide, says even feminists are divided in their views of sex work. So-called abolitionist feminists believe that both female prostitution and pornography are inherently violent against women and must never be treated as normal.
Versus more sex worker rights types of feminists, more progressive feminists who argue that this is actually a way women can use to end their poverty. So in that sense, it can be viewed as a form of empowerment. It's a job that comes with ups and downs like many other jobs. But for women in particular, it can be used as a tool and as a strategy to better their lives.
M.F. Aquinos, the founder of the Black Sex Workers Collective, is a case in point. Today, she's a stripper and performance artist. But Aquinos began her career as an escort after several romantic disappointments with men.
I never expected to become an escort. I got tired of being mistreated, and I knew also that I hated corporate America. So I just decided to take matters in my own hand. I figured if I'm going to have sex and be giving someone my time, I might as well get paid for it. And so I did.
Just before taking the festival stage, Aquinos looks happy to be joining her community. And with growing sex worker rights groups in North and South America, Europe, Asia, and Africa, that community is now worldwide. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Over the past few years, rebel groups from several African nations have moved into southern Libya, taking advantage of the lack of government control to shelter from their own governments. But the Libyan National Army, headed by General Khalifa Haftar, is giving those militias 9 days to leave or face military action. The Libyan National Army also has pulled upon neighboring African states not to push rebels into Libya or use them to destabilize the volatile south. In recent days, there have been heavy clashes among armed African groups in the southwestern city of Saba. Libyan political analyst Ibrahim Haiba spoke to VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi about the different African militias operating in southern Libya and the threats they pose.
Most of them, they are opposition army, north of Chad, north of Niger, north of Sudan, north of Mali, and south of Algeria. Those African armed militia found a good opportunity now to immigrate in Libya because there are some pressure from the government of Chad, the government of Niger, government of Sudan, government of Mali, government of Algeria. So they found it's a very good opportunity for them to move into Libya and reorganize themselves there. And unfortunately, the government of those sub-Saharan countries find this is really also very good opportunity for them to get rid of those armed militia and the armed opposition and send them to Libya in order to stabilize the region at the expense of the Libyan country. And they are engaging in the conflict in Libya. And not only the armed militia, but in fact, some tribal and their tribal also moved to Libya in the south and building their bases there. And there are also some news that there are some terrorist group, or they might cooperate with other terrorist groups.
Are these militias working also in organized crimes like trafficking of drugs and immigrants?
Yes, basically they rely mostly in the human traffic and woman black market and dealing with tourists and trying to use the border in order to empower themselves and try to organize themselves. So basically they are controlling most of the south right now.
So who is preventing these African militias from controlling southern Libya?
Basically, the Libyan people or the tribal of the Libyan people, they're trying to fight them. But unfortunately, the Libyan tribe are very weak. They are not getting support from the Libyan government. And the people are just fighting them and try to contain them. Basically, they are not able, honestly, to fight those groups because those are well-armed and well-training. Mr. Haftar sent a small group of Libyan army there to assist the Libyan to contain the situation. But unfortunately, both African armed militia and armed opposition have dealt with many Libyan militia in different parts of the region. And they have been recruited by many armed militia and different political parties in Libya. So the situation is very bad in the south.
There were news reports about Libyan families abandoning their homes in Sabha. Would the presence of African militias in the south threaten the demographic composition of Libyan population there?
Certainly, there are signs that a lot of Libyan family moved to Tripoli or moved to the north because they are not able to provide security for themselves and for their family.
That was Libyan political analyst Ibrahim Haiba. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi.
The UN Environment Program is taking aim at corporations and governments that threaten and intimidate environmental defenders and pollute the planet. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where a panel of environmental activists explored the actions needed to ensure a safe, healthy environment.
I've learned over the years that I'm not alone.
A film that began a panel discussion is narrated by Kenyan environmental activist Phyllis Omido. She succeeded in closing down a lead smelting plant in a slum near Mombasa, which she said spewed poisonous fumes into the air, killing and harming local residents, including her child. While that battle was won, the fight is far from over. UN Environment's head of communication for environmental governance, Niam Branigan, says threats against environmental defenders continue.
We've been receiving messages over the last 2 days to say that another environmental defender has been shot dead in the Philippines. Ricardo Mayumi of the Ifugao peasant movement, he's been leading the opposition to the mini hydro dam in Santa Clara of the Santa Clara Power Corporation, and we believe that he has been shot dead.
Between 2002 and 2013, the United Nations reports 908 people in 35 countries have been killed defending the environment and land. UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights Kate Gilmore says all human rights depend on the environment. Yet, she says, people continue to pollute the Earth's resources for short-term economic gain, endangering the lives and livelihoods of future generations.
The polluter must pay, so we say. But in practice, it is those who have contributed the least who are paying the most. We know what to do. Defend the environment and defend those who defend it, and hold those who violate the law accountable.
Bianca Jagger is president and chief executive of the Bianca Jagger Human Rights Foundation. She calls for those who assassinate environmental defenders of indigenous peoples and their communities to be brought to justice. But she acknowledges that is difficult because governments often join forces with companies that exploit indigenous rights.
And so we need to make a call to all those multinationals or national companies that are involved in dams, mining, and other exploitation of the land, who want to take the land away from indigenous peoples and their ancestral land from indigenous people, that we need to put an end to that.
UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and the Environment, John Knox, was instrumental in pushing forward the Environmental Rights Initiative that seeks to promote, protect, and respect human and environmental rights. He says it is absolutely crucial that more be done to protect environmental defenders.
4 people on average a week are killed around the world for trying to protect the environment. If we can't protect the people who are trying to protect the environment for the rest of us, everything else we're doing will be ineffective. So it's absolutely vital that we do that.
Knox says the right to a healthy environment has been adopted by more than 100 countries. In an ironic twist, he notes one place where it has not been adopted is at the United Nations. He says it is time for this world body to recognize that everyone should be able to enjoy his or her human right to a safe and healthy environment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.